Morning. Please turn in your Bibles to Luke chapter 17. We are going to start there today. Excellent job on the music this morning. It's been very much a cappella, no real instruments or anything, which we usually have. Apparently, the school incubator has gotten everybody sick. It's like all the kids go back to school. They all get sick at school. They bring it home. Mom and dad get sick. And then all the music people get sick. And so we're doing a cappella music, which is great. I'm old school. Love that stuff. It is hurricane season, as we all know, and prayers and best recoveries to all the folks on the coastline. And, it's like I'm sure there's a lot of damage, a lot of flooding. Need to really keep them in our prayers. But because it's hurricane season, we get treated to a video of low-level meteorologists standing out, daring the rain and the winds. And, first, meteorologists, I would think, would be somebody that studies meteors, but apparently it's not. But I don't know how this became a thing for everybody to stand out there with the microphone in the rain. Are we as a public so dumb that this is what the networks think we want to see? Just the guy standing out in the rain, obviously not having the sense to get out of the rain. But I thought this can be good because sometimes you see some really funny stuff. I want to show you a clip of a guy here. He's braving the winds and the rain. Yeah. I mean, you can tell. He's really leaning into it. I mean, it's like the wind is just, buckling his knees and, and then two dudes just kind of stroll by like, what? It's raining. Okay, we get it. So anyway, I'm sure that the next time we have a hurricane, we'll see guys standing out in the rain. What's going to happen is somebody's going to have to get hurt really bad, like a tree fall on them, and then we'll have no more low-level meteorologists out there in the rain. In Luke chapter 17, beginning in verse 11, "Now on his way to Jerusalem, Jesus traveled along the border between Samaria and Galilee. As he was going into a village, 10 men who had leprosy met him. They stood at a distance and called out in a loud voice, 'Jesus, Master, have pity on us.' When he saw them, he said, 'Go show yourselves to the priests.' And as they went, they were cleansed. One of them, when he saw he was healed, came back, praising God in a loud voice. He threw himself at Jesus' feet and thanked him. And he was a Samaritan. Jesus asked, 'Were not all 10 cleansed? Where are the other 9? Was no one found to return and give praise to God except this foreigner?' Then he said to him, 'Rise and go. Your faith has made you well.'" So Jesus is coming into a town, and as he comes into the town, there's a group of 10 lepers on the outskirts of town. And they call out to him, "Jesus, Master, have pity on us." Because if you were a leper, you had to live outside the town. You had to live in a leper colony because leprosy was so contagious. And if anybody was to come up to you, you had to shout, "Unclean, lepers," because they couldn't get close to you. And leprosy is and was a bad disease. What happens with leprosy is it's a bacterial infection. And of course, it's the bacteria is the Mycobacterium leprae, but I'm not telling you anything you don't know. But that's the bacteria. And what it does, it just overruns your immune system so that you literally start disintegrating. Your body disintegrates because of this flesh-eating bacteria. And it starts with the extremities first. It's like fingers, toes, ears, noses. Things just start disintegrating and they fall off. The only silver lining to leprosy is that when those things start disintegrating, and imagine what that would be like. That's got to be super painful. But those things, when they start falling off, it infects your whole body and you quickly get a full system infection, sepsis, and you die pretty quickly. That's the only silver lining to leprosy. It's highly contagious, hence you have to have leper colonies. You have to get everybody out of town. Now there's a cure for it. There's an antibiotic that we found, Dapsone, which is a diaminodiphenylsulfone. Duh. You know, I mean, you knew that. But we have some. So if you get leprosy, and you could get leprosy today, you just go to the pharmacy, get your Dapsone, and you'll be just fine. Now, today there's also lots of diseases that you can get. You can get AIDS, bad disease. You can get shingles, which I hear is very bad. Don Thomas caught it a few weeks ago, and he walked around here looking like Quasimodo. It was not pretty. You can get AIDS, you can get shingles, or you can get cancer. The big C, the granddaddy of them all. The disease that if you're sitting across the doctor and he aims it at you and says, you have cancer, all the blood just kind of drains out of your head. And you know your life has just changed. And you're like, oh, daddy, here we go. I mean, there's plenty of bad diseases you can get today. But you know, if you find out that you have cancer, what happens to you in your life? You get more love. You get more support from your people. You get more quality time with your family. You get more casseroles. People are bringing the casseroles. That's if you get cancer. If you get leprosy, you get none of that. In addition to the disease and the symptoms of the disease, you got to move out of town. You got to get the heck out of town. You got to leave your wife. You got to leave your kids. You got to leave your parents. You got to leave your house. You have to leave your chair, you know, your favorite chair that you sit in. You got to leave your little bed where you lay your head at night. You got to leave all that. You got to leave your job. You got to just get out of here. And you're living out there on the outskirts of town with this horrible disease, and you got nobody. You're disintegrating and you're alone. And I imagine, you know, it's like as I try to think this through, it's like probably what your family would do is they would give an effort to try to stay in touch with you. You know, the first couple days, your wife would come out to the outskirts of town. Honey, how was your day? Terrible. I have leprosy. How was yours? But, you know, after a couple days, that would just get old. And pretty soon, everybody would stop coming. And you'd just be out there disintegrating and alone. And you know, Jesus prayed a prayer when he was on the cross. And in that prayer, he said, Eloi, Eloi, lama sabachthani, which is Aramaic for my God, why have you forsaken me? And I think that's probably how these lepers felt. Eloi, Eloi, lama sabachthani. Why have you forsaken me? God, why have you abandoned me? I understand why people have abandoned me. It's because I have a highly contagious disease. But why have you abandoned me? Why have you left me alone? Why have you just left me alone? I'm here. You're supposed to be my God. Where are you? Now, every one of us in this room, and maybe it's happened to you already, but if it hasn't, it's going to happen. Every one of us in this room is going to come to a point in your life one day where you are flat on your back and you're looking up into heaven and you're saying, Eloi, Eloi, lama sabachthani. God, why have you forsaken me? Why have you left me here? I've been there. You've been there. You may have been there and then recovered and it may be coming again. But every one of us is going to be in that place where we say, I'm disintegrating and I'm alone. You say, Steve, I hate to rain on your little misery parade here, but, you know, that's not me. I'm happy. I'm healthy. I don't really have any problems. I like the nightlife. I like the boogie. You know, I'm okay with all the, you know, I'm just doing fine. Everything's okay with me. Well, that good for you. Good for you. But what I would say is give it some time. Give it some time. Jesus said in John 16, verse 33, in this world you will have trouble. Now take heart because I've overcome the world, but in this world you will have trouble. You know, I think we'd like to go through life with no trouble. And there may have been one or two people in the history of the world who have gone through life and just everything worked out. They didn't have any trouble. Maybe two people out of 10 billion, however many. But it's very much an anomaly. It's very much off the charts. Most of us, the vast majority, 99.999999999, have problems. We have trouble. But imagine if you were reading a novel about a guy who had a great life. You know, he was raised up in a great family, and he got a great education, and he married a great girl, and they had some great kids, and, you know, he had a great career, got a lot of money, a lot of awards, a lot of trophies, and then the kids, and he had great grandchildren, and then he, you know, retired after 50 years, he got the great gold watch, and then he died surrounded by his loved ones in his bed peacefully. That's a novel. What a boring novel that would be. Nobody would read that novel. Because that's not real. That's not life. That would not be a bestseller. That would be a you and your mom bought the book seller. That's all it would be. Because that's not real life. That is not real life. We do have trouble. Eloi, Eloi, what's your particular brand of leprosy this morning? Deep. Good question. Yeah. What is your particular brand of leprosy this morning? It's your own individualized little leprosy. It's the thing that makes you say, God, why have you forsaken me? Maybe it's an addiction. You know, some people are addicted to chemicals. They put a chemical in their body one time and boom, it just hit and it stuck. It was like a switch got flipped. And it's like, as soon as that chemical hit, it was like, I got to get that chemical back in my body again. And so, you know, you just had this gnawing hunger. I got a drink. I got a methamphetamine. I got a heroin. I got to do this stuff that other people don't have, but you have. And so you say, you get to rock bottom, you look up, God, why have you forsaken me? My family's gone, my job is gone, everything's gone. I'm an addict. That's your particular brand. Maybe it's a besetting sin you have, just something you just can't get over. Maybe it's a character flaw that you have, your temper. You know, that temper of mine, man, when my temper hits, I just kind of black out and they tell me what happened later. And it'll ruin your life. It'll get you fired. It'll get you divorced. It'll get you everything. Maybe your particular form of leprosy today is that you feel alone. Now, you're in a room full of people, but you feel alone. You know, it's like you don't have somebody to share your life with. I'm really glad you guys had a great marriage retreat last week. But I didn't have a great marriage retreat last week because I'm not married. And I want to be married. Or I used to be married and he turned out to be a jerk, so now I'm not married anymore. And that could be the kind of thing that makes you say, God, why have you abandoned me? I want to share my life with somebody. I want to be like that with somebody. You know, here's all I will say to you about that. Life is long and God knows what you need. God knows what you want. And I will tell you from, you know, just talking to a lot of people, it is way better to not be married than to be married to the wrong person. That's why people get divorces. Hey, you were married. What was so great? Well, I got divorced because I didn't want to be married. It's like life is long. God knows what you need. And I'd like to just encourage some of the sisters. If you don't have anybody to share your life with right now, I think you're amazing. I think you're beautiful and spiritual and strong and smart. So what I want to encourage you to do is be aggressive. Be aggressive. Okay? Now, I'm not, if there's a guy you're interested in who's not in the church, then here's what you do. You meet him at work. Don't say, hey, after work, let's go have drinks and dinner. Don't say that. But here's what you can say. Hey, after church on Sunday, let's go grab lunch. See, that's communicating a message to them about who you are and what you're about. And, you know, it's like, be aggressive with this thing. Let God know, God, this is what I want. I've been down here. I want this. Work this thing out for me. You know, make a pact with God. You can do that, you know. You can make a pact. You can set up a contract with God. God, if you do this for me, I'll do this for you. Very important. Make sure if God does that for you, make sure you follow through and hold up your end of the bargain. I think we don't like to think about making pacts with God because we associate it making pact with the devil. You know, people make pacts with the devil. Like, clearly, Nick Saban has made a pact with the devil. Nick Saban said to the devil, if you will make me the greatest college football coach in the history of the world, I'll sell my soul to you. Clearly, he made that pact. And it's so obvious because, you know, Nick Saban substitute a T for a B. Hello. Sit down, Rocky. I'm preaching the word here, Rocky. Don't make a pact with the devil, but you can make a pact with God. At one point in my life, I made a pact with God. When it was 1973, I was in college at the University of Florida, and I was sitting on a little bench out in a little wooded area across the street from my dormitory, and I was sitting out there, and I said, God, if you will get me out of this trouble I'm in, because I was in huge trouble, if you'll get me out of this trouble, I promise you I will seek you, I will find you, and I will become a Christian. And what I was praying about was that morning at dawn, I'd been up all night and I had my dorm room door open, and the campus police walked by with a guy from my dorm, from my floor. They walked past, they detained him. They were bringing him in for questioning. And Mike Taberzi, God bless Mike Taberzi. Mike Taberzi knew everything there was to know about my little criminal syndicate that I had running out of the dorm. And he knew everything. And if he had ratted me out, I would have been in huge trouble. I would have been expelled, probably gone to jail. I mean, you know, because we're talking, I don't want to get into too much detail because statute of limitations and all, but it's something about interstate drug trafficking. So I was in huge trouble, and I see him taking off Mike. I'm like, God, if you'll get me out of this trouble, I will serve you. And Mike Taberzi, God bless his head, he didn't rat me out. You know, because snitches get stitches. He didn't rat me out, and nothing ever happened. Nothing ever happened. But I told God that day, sitting on that bench, if you will get me out of this trouble, I will stop doing what I'm doing, and I will search for you, and I will seek you out, and I will find you, and I'll become a Christian. And that's exactly what happened within the next 2 years. So make a pact with God. You're not in as big a trouble as I was in. Make a pact with God and let God know what you want. You know, because God knows your deal. You know, God knows when a sparrow falls to the ground. God knows what you want. God knows what you need. And God has so much patience, sometimes it's just aggravating how patient he can be. I mean, you know, he'll wait a decade and he's just getting started. You know, we're like, okay, Lord, it's been 3 days. I've learned my lesson. No. You got another 10 years, dude. 30 years. God has way more patience than we ever thought about having. So back in verse 12, he's going into the village. Jesus is. 10 men who had leprosy met him, stood at a distance, called out in a loud voice, Jesus, Master, have pity on us. When he saw them, he said, go show yourself to the priest. And as they went, they were cleansed. Now, this command that Jesus gave makes no sense. Because he says, go show yourself to the priest. Where's the priest? He's in town. Jesus, I can't go into town or else I'll be stoned. But, you know, that's what Jesus told them to do. Just go show yourself to the priest. Here they are, mangled up, all pussy and infected. Go show yourself to the priest. I can't do that up here. But what they did, they just did what the man said. Go show yourself to the priest. That makes no sense to me, but okay. Took that first step, and it says, as they went, they were cleansed. You know, sometimes you just got to do what the man says. You know, sometimes you just got to put yourself in a position to be blessed. Do what God says. You know, there's lots of stuff you can't control in your life, but there's some stuff you can control. You know, if you've got a lot to do, you don't have a job, you're looking for a job, and you want to find a job, so you wake up Monday morning, you're like, I got to get a job. Here's what you do first. Make your bed. Make your bed. You got control over that. You can't control if somebody decides to give you a job. But dadgummit, you can make your bed. Make your bed. That's the first step. When you make your bed, you feel good. You feel better. I got something accomplished today. Then go find a job. Just control what you can control. It's funny, when I was in real estate, you know, it started, I was with Prudential, and, you know, it had some measure of success. And so they had a sales meeting, and they said, Steve, we want to have you come up, and we want to interview you about your success. So they got him there and said, Steve, what's the key to selling real estate? And I said, answer your phone. Just answer your phone. I can't control everything in real estate, but I can control whether I answer my phone. And the reason it made me think that was because there were so many agents I couldn't get a hold of. I'd call them on the phone. They wouldn't answer. Leave a message and never call me back. So I always said, I'm going to answer my phone. Right, Janie? I'm going to answer my phone. And that's all it really took. Just sometimes you just got to put yourself in position to be blessed. That's when the magic happens. So one of them, all 10 of them went and were cleansed. But one of them came back and he thanked Jesus. And Jesus says, where are the 9? Weren't all 10 people cleansed? Where are the 9? That's a great question. Where were the 9? Where were the 9? You know, I think sometimes we're too rough on the 9. I think we kind of think, oh, the 9. Well, yeah, they were cleansed, but they just went and got hammered and went to the strip club. No, I don't think that's what happened. Where were the 9? They were at home. They went home. That's the first thing they thought of. I'm going home. And they hugged their wife. They walked in all the joy. Oh my, honey, you're cleansed. They hugged their wife. They hugged their kids. All the parents came over, brothers, sisters, friends. They sat down in their chair. They just sat there. Look around. Yesterday I was in that leper colony. Now I'm here. They slept in their bed. Started making some calls about getting my job back. They just went on. I don't think they were ungrateful. I think they were very grateful. They just skipped a step. They were grateful for the gift, but they just overlooked the giver. That's not what the one guy did. The one guy, he went back, he marched into town. And he's praising God in a loud voice. You know, it's irritating sometimes when preachers yell, right? It's loud. You know, they're just trying to get your attention. This guy was not being shy. This guy was not, you know, wanting to, like, keep this under wraps. He wanted everybody to know that Jesus just healed me. He marched back into town with a loud voice, threw himself at Jesus' feet, and thanked him. I mean, he was loud about it. He let everybody know what was going on. You know, who's completely restored and got 2 thumbs? This guy. You know, he was just out there. He was effusive in his praise for Jesus. Why does he go see Jesus first instead of going home first? Because he knows without Jesus, there would be no home. There would be no home without Jesus. There would be no cleansing without Jesus. There would be no husband without Jesus. There'd be no wife without Jesus. There'd be no chair to sit in. I'd still be back in the leper colony. There'd be no sins to overcome. There'd be no struggles to battle without Jesus. You know, Kim and I recently celebrated 37 years of marriage. Strong to very strong. So it was in August. We were talking about it. And, I said, that's quite an accomplishment. And she said, yeah, it really is quite an accomplishment. But if it wasn't for God, we would have never made it. That kind of bothered me a little bit, right? Yeah, we would have got divorced. There would have been no way we would have made it. If only God. And it kind of bugged me, but then I thought, wait a minute. I'm being the 9. She's being the 1. I'm being the 9 because I'm like, we have quite an accomplishment. I'm really thankful for the gift. She was like, yeah, but without God, we never would have made it this far. Amen. So she was being the 1, I was being the 9. And there's nothing wrong with being the 9, but it's way better to be the 1. She's grateful. She was grateful for the gift. She was grateful to the giver. We're grateful for all the stuff God gives us in our lives. But we also got to be grateful for the giver. So Wednesday night, we had our men's midweek, and it was very, very cool. We celebrated Mark Law and Dan Clemens, and they're fighting cancer. And I mean, they are putting up a heroic battle. I mean, strong, faithful, brave, integrity, fearlessness. I mean, just they are being heroic. And we wanted them to know that. Like Jim said, we didn't tell them, hey, we're going to do that, because we knew they wouldn't have come. So we kind of, I told Tip, you know, I said, now listen, you got to make sure you get Dan there. So I called him. He's like, is the package landing soon? Yes, the package is landing. Okay, good. So we knew they were coming. And we wanted them to know how much we love them. Amen. We wanted them to know how much we value them, how much we respect them, how much we admire them, how grateful we are for them. And I know it wasn't easy for them to listen to it Wednesday night, and it's not easy to hear it today. But we wanted them to know that they're not alone. Not alone. Because that's a bad way to feel, is alone. And so we had a low country boil. And I'm telling you, women, this Wednesday night, whatever you do, don't miss this meal. Because, like, this is the best restaurant in town. I drive a lot of restaurants. This is... So we had a low country boil. Trip and, you know, Mark and some of the guys, they made a low country boil. Sausage and shrimp and potatoes and, you know, and just, and we put like brown paper on the tables and just kind of roll it all out, all the junk right on the table, and then just scoop it up. It's a real man meal. I doubt we'll do that on Wednesday. But it was an amazing, amazing meal. I mean, it was just like, if I went to a restaurant and had this, I would lose my mind. This is so good. And then we started sharing. And, you know, people shared about them and things that they had done for them and ways that they had encouraged them and ways they had impacted their families. And just, we respect you, we love you, we value you, you're not alone. And then Tip Harrison started sharing. And it was all over. Because Tip got choked up. And, you know, when guys cry, it's like, I just want to... Say the note. And then they gather themselves for like 4 minutes. You're my best. And Tip started that, and then we all just lost it. And then at the end of the night, we took some oil and we anointed their heads with it. James 5, it says, if any of you is sick, you should pray. Call the elders of the church together. And have them anoint with oil. So I found the oldest people I could find. Sonny and Tim Cummings. The hair. I saw the hair and I went with it. But they anointed Mark and Dan with oil. And I mean, it was like, it was holy ground. Right back there. That was holy ground. And as we prayed... It was like so quiet. You could hear the sound of silence. And it would not have surprised me if Jesus had materialized and just stood in the middle, robe and sandals, the whole deal. It was just that kind of moment. I mean, I'll never forget it. And even though his physical presence didn't materialize, the Spirit of God was there.
Amen.
It was there. And I fully expect some really good news to come out of that on the health front. But it was just an amazing, amazing time. You know, because we wanted them to know that they're not alone. We want to know that we're grateful for them. You know, your life is measured not by what you have. It's measured by who you love. And it's measured by who loves you. And on the day of your death, on your deathbed, you know, we all picture it. We all thought about it. The day that I die, on your deathbed, what you're not going to do is you're not going to tell somebody, go to the bank and take out my money, and I want it wrapped up in $10,000 increments, and I want some cash. I want you to just put it in the bed with me. And I want you to get some gold and silver, too, you know, just so I have a little heft here in the bed. And I want you to get my CPA, and I want you to have him come into the room here, and I want you to have him read off the values and the sums of my IRAs and my certificates of deposits and my annuities. And I want him to bring out the stock certificates, just kind of throw them on the bed. And I want him to talk about, you know, all the businesses I have in receivership, and I want to, you know, bring all the trophies and the awards that I got from my career. And while you're at it, open up the drapes and pull my car around because I want to look out the window and see my car because I love that car. That's not what you're going to be about on the day of your death. You know what you're going to have in that room? You're going to have your people. You're going to have your people there. Your relationship with your dog is going to be more important than all that stuff. Now, it may not be more important to your heirs than all that stuff. But you'll care more about your dog than you will about how much stuff you got. You want your people there. You want your wife, your husband, your kids, your parents, brothers, sisters, friends. That's who you want there. And you'll want stuff like your high school yearbook. You want to look through that. Think about all the memories from that. You want to watch a video of your wedding. Oh, look. Look at all the people. Because that's all that's going to matter on that day is the people. You want that box of photos. Those photos from 20, 30 years ago. You know, that's what you're going to be looking for. Gratitude is one of the best things that you can have in your life. No matter what happens, I don't care how bad it is, how negative it is, if you can find something to be grateful for in the midst of it, it turns it all around because it turns you around. It turns your attitude around. Be grateful. Without God, we have nothing. We have nothing. It's not bad to be the nine, but it's so much better to be the one. Thank you very much. Amen.